Kingston Town can't win.
Bone Crusher and our Waverley Star, stride for stride.
Cometh the hour, cometh the legend, Winks has done it.
We're joined by Australia's number one caller, the famous voice in Melbourne, Matt Hill. Matty, thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Boys, absolute pleasure to spend a bit of time at the Valley with the young lions of the racing industry. Fantastic.
So we'll take it back to 2000, 23 years ago now. You were a recipient of the scholarship for young race callers of John Tapp of Sky Racing, of course. And how'd you first come about getting that gig, and what was your first experience like there?
Well, that was, as you say, 23 years ago, but before that, there was so much groundwork that was done, so I would come to the races, particularly here and Flemington up the road, and call into a little tape recorder. I'd sit in a spare box at the trots and the gallops here. In fact, it was my misspent youth, really. Instead of, you know, doing what 14, 15-year-olds usually do, I was wandering into race courses with a tape recorder and a pair of binoculars and calling races. And that's what I always wanted to do. I had a great love for it. So I'd always come here to Moonee Valley. My granddad would always take me to the races at Flemington and Moonee Valley. And it was just what I did. It was something that I didn't think was unnatural, or I didn't think it was something that was a nerdy or anything like that. It was just what I did. And I've got countless cassettes at home, probably 2,000 of them, of old calls from calling into a tape recorder here at the Valley. And loved it, absolutely loved it. And then it's one of those jobs that you can't open up a newspaper and see job for a race caller wanted. So when Sky Racing in Sydney had a scholarship, they opened it up, and I think about 300 people applied, and I was lucky to get the gig. So I was 19, moved up from Melbourne, packed my little Ford Telstra, and up I went, and never looked back since, really.
And what's that journey like been from then to now, you know, being the number one race caller in Victoria, and, you know, we think Australia's best race caller. What's that journey been like in between to get where you are today?
Well, the thing is, it's a journey, but it was also a very fun journey. I mean, in Sydney, I was calling greyhound racing and harness racing and gallops action in the bush and doing the odd city call and presenting. And you just, I was working through the grades, as we would say in racing, in race calling terms as well. But it never, for me, was a chore. It was always something I wanted to do, and just wanted to keep growing and improving on what I was doing. I was never really a competitive person with anybody else. I was more trying to improve myself. So the journey was, you know, it's been, you learn a lot, and you, as a race broadcaster, you're always learning something. Even if you go to a normal race meeting on a Saturday afternoon, I'll keep learning. You'll never, the great thing about race broadcasting is it's not a computer science. So it's completely governed by the human brain. So we're always learning on the run, and also, you know, thinking about things we could do better next time.
Getting into it early, you've called a few different codes of racing. Any funny stories or different stories that stand out amongst your time doing, off the beaten track a bit?
Well, the great thing about going to a lot of these country racetracks is the facilities that you call from. You know, I called from the back of a ute one day, the barrier trials up in northern New South Wales. It's not like the good old days when Bill Collins and Bert Bryant used to call races from trees and blimps and things like that. But, you know, you do see plenty of the countryside and get lots of for me, it's the characters, it's the people that you meet along the way, you know, and you think it back over, say, 20 years, and I sound like I'm 75 when I say this, but I'm only early 40s, but, you know, you just do meet so many people, from bookmakers to jockeys to trainers and so many owners. And the great thing about horse racing is that in that journey, you meet everyone from knockabout people who, you know, are scraping a living together but wouldn't do it any other way, or multi-millionaires running businesses and owning football clubs and all that sort of stuff. So that's the fun of the racing game.
And in the current day, Matty, you're obviously calling 2 to 3 meetings a week. You're also, we hear you calling the football on the weekends sometimes. Talk us through what your week looks like at the moment.
Well, during the spring, it becomes a lot busier because there's always something to do. But the best part of our job is, I would call three race meetings a week through the spring into the summer. But we just don't rock up and work. It's a good 4 or 5 hours of preparation for each meeting goes in first. And I love that time just in the office at home, just sort of going through the horses and learning them and the narratives of each race and doing the videos and the form. So I quite enjoy that part of it, but I also enjoy the performance part of it when we get to the track. You can't possibly rock up and perform at your best if you haven't done the preparation prior. So that takes a fair bit of your week. And also things like this or functions, through the spring. So I'm kept pretty occupied. And it's a long spring carnival for a race caller, the three months, you're trying to be as accurate and on your game all the time. So it is quite a long haul, but you wouldn't swap it for anything else, I get to walk away from a great race meeting like a Cox Plate or a Melbourne Cup. As you can see, I was never going to ride in a race. I was never going to do that or be a horse trainer. In fact, to be honest, my early days of being around horses, my mum was a great friend of a horse trainer in Ballarat, a man by the name of Jack Dalton, and he would put me and my brother in the back of a horse float and go to all of these country race meetings. I hated horses. They were smelly, cantankerous animals to me, but I loved the sport part of it, And that was what really spurred me on to do what I wanted to do. So through the spring, to walk away from the Cox Plate or the Melbourne Cup or whatever race I'm calling and be a little bit of part of it is really special.
Social media, we know that any time that we post anything to do with you or mentions your name, it goes, it's like gold for us. It's quite universal that everyone loves you across multiple different sports because you do extend to that. You don't have a social media following or social media profile, sorry. Is there a reason for that?
There's a couple of reasons for that. Well, the first of them is that I don't want to get bogged down in all of that. I just don't really have the energy to go through the social media side of things. And there's an element of social media that's quite false as well. You'll see a lot of unhappy people put things up on social media. Oh, here I am, I'm nice and happy, but deep down they're not. There's a lot of, it's not real, and I'm sort of a person that keeps things pretty real, I think. I'm a realist. So it's just not something that's really, that's grabbed me. It's social media. And it's very important for a lot of people. Via things like Facebook, Twitter, people can follow friends and family overseas and things. I think the general gist of social media, it was created for the right reasons. But the harsh reality of it is, especially for broadcasters or sports people, it's a cesspool of hate. And again, it's not real. And I don't need it. There's probably an element to me that is a bit of a sensitive soul, would take it pretty seriously if someone, for no real reason, was just having an attack at me. But there's also a part of race broadcasting I find that's important, is that we use our brain so much that it's a bit like a batsman at the crease or a footballer 40 metres out from goal in a grand final or a golfer about to putt for $1 million. When they're set to go in the Cox Plate, the last thing I need is any type of negativity or self-doubt in the back of my brain. And I don't care who you are. You could be the most sternest person but read something on Twitter negative about yourself and it sits in your brain. And even if you want to be stoic and admit that it doesn't, it might be sitting there subconsciously and it's not healthy. So for me, people come up to me and say, oh, you should be on social media. People are saying lovely things. I don't need that. I know if I've called a bad race or not. I don't need people telling me that I've done something wrong. I need to keep my brain clean and clear for those big moments, and I think that's vital. So that's the main reason why I'm not on social media. I understand its power. I understand the reach it's got, and for many people in marketing or, you know, sponsorship or whatever you guys are up to, absolutely knock yourself out. But I find that it's – and it's a little bit like – I heard Stephen Fry say something once, how if you jumped in a swimming pool and it was 99.9% clean – but you knew there was like a little bit of poo or something in the corner of the pool, you wouldn't jump in it.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like Twitter. You know, 99.9% of people want to say something really nice and they're genuinely nice and it's lovely. There's always that little bit of percentage that are going to be bloody nasty, and I don't want to be near that.
I'd love to see you on there though, and if someone did dish one out to you, if you'd give it back, because I reckon you'd be able to give it back, you know, behind the big smile.
Really?
I reckon you'd come up, you'd be quick-witted and you'd be able to dish something back to someone pretty quickly.
Oh, I'd be able to be quick-witted and give it, but I'm not a confrontational person either. It'd just be, put it this way, it'd be 5 to 10 minutes of a waste of time.
Correct.
For me, do you know what I mean? And it'd probably spoil my day, so yeah. I just, I'd prefer to...
I think
to
I'm yet to come it, across yeah. one negative post anytime we put something up.
You'd be surprised.
It's always been positive, mate.
Sometimes the worst thing is people say nice things and then the soothsayers want to come in and, you know, absolutely attack. So you know what it's like. It's a part of life now. I mean, as I say, I'm a little bit older too, early 40s. So if I was in my 20s, I'd probably embrace it maybe. It's just something that there are certain jobs, I think, that probably should stay off it. And I'm probably in a role that, because let's be honest, people are punting on a Saturday afternoon, and if they've backed the wrong horse or their horse has been beaten in a photo or whatever, they've got to take it out on someone, and they might as well take it out on the messenger,
yep.
which is me. So at the end of the day, I'm going to cop it on Twitter for something. And that's fine, knock yourself out. But I think it's a generational thing, and it just never grasped me. But that's okay.
Matty, we fast forward to 2017. Legendary caller Greg Miles has just hung up the binoculars, and the number one position in Melbourne is left ajar. What are your memories from that? You obviously had a good CV, but what was the interviewing process like? Were there interviews? Do you remember them?
Well, I do remember them, but the funniest thing about this question is a lot of people are interested in what the interview process was like. I suppose it's a bit weird. How do you interview race callers, you know? But, yeah. No, it wasn't anything like that. You'd think you probably would, but I think, look, and I don't know who was in the field, to be honest. I think it was a pretty small field, but, you know, I think we were pretty much well established, the people that were going for the job anyway. And the funniest thing, you know, I've known Greg for a long, long time. You know, I met Greg when I was 15 in the box at Flemington, and I think many people sort of thought that that with Greg retiring that, he had a lot to do with that decision that was made, but he sort of bowed out of it because he knew all the people that were on the start list, you know. It was the job for me that when I left race calling for Sky Channel in 2015, I sort of made peace with the fact that I might never call another race, even though I did some calling for the ABC. I did a Cox Plate, Winx's second Cox Plate for the ABC. And I thought, well, look, you know, I want to be a sports broadcaster, so I have to make peace with the fact as if I'm walking away from race calling, so be it. But then when Greg retired, it was a bit of a shock for everybody because we weren't expecting it. I thought Greg would have gone for another 5 to 10 years. So I'd had sort of made peace with it, and then when Greg retired, it's like, well, it's sort of the job I always wanted to be. Greg Miles, the two people in life I always wanted to be were Greg Miles and Bruce McAvaney. They were my heroes, you know. And it's like, well, it's probably got my name written all over it. I'm the right age, got the right experience. I've been the main caller in Sydney for 6 years, so I've got the right experience for it. And I genuinely thought, I wasn't really nervous about it at all. I thought, well, I am the person for it. They just have to believe that, you know. And as I said in the interview process with the CEO of Racing Victoria and at racing.com at the time and a few other people in the room, I said, well, it really just depends on when the gates open in the Melbourne Cup. Who do you want to say? As a branding thing, they're off in the Melbourne Cup. That's what it comes down to. And of course, Australia's best race, the Cox Plate. And that's basically what it comes down to, you know.
Yeah, awesome.
And you mentioned just briefly there the you called the second of the Mighty Mares Cox Plates for ABC, but Greg Miles' famous line there, the Winx Blitz line.
But it's all Winx in the straight. 4-5 lengths in front of Hartnell. A good battle going on for the Miners. But this is a blitz. It's a Winx blitz. Two in a row. And she joins the all-time greats of the turf. Winx has won it by 6 lengths to Hartnell.
There's a bit of a story behind that with Greg. Can you just give us some insight on what that was?
Well, you know, a lot of people ask about, and because we had a lot of this through Winx, you know, and Black Caviar for the callers before that, about rehearsing lines for famous moments. And when you think about it, it doesn't really make much sense to rehearse a line for a famous moment, because moments just become famous as they are. And I think why Greg's call of the second Cox Plate of Winx was ingenious was because it actually wasn't a rehearsed line at all. It was something that just came to him because he'd walked downstairs to get a cup of tea between races 4 or 5 on Cox Plate day. I think from memory it was actually a really wintry day, wasn't it? It was pouring rain. Yeah. And Greg's gone to get a coffee. He's run into a mate. How are you going? Great to see you. Who's going to win it today, do you think? And his mate turned around and said, "Ah, I reckon Winx will blitz him." And it just sort of come to him. And then in the call, obviously, she's raced away and it's come to him on that moment. So it just shows you that you can walk onto a racetrack not really thinking about those sort of lines and how a little bit of an inspiration or a conversation with someone might spur on a word or something like that. And the loveliest part about that call, it was just so organic the way it was produced. You don't want to, I would lie if I said I hadn't thought of the stuff I was going to say about Winx. They were actually quite very closely crafted things that I said. But the art of it is to try and get them in as if you were never going to say it. You know, it's got to be as organic as you possibly can. Because it really is. It's a live sporting broadcast. It's not an act. It's meant to be real and live at the time. So that's what you grasp with when you have a champion like Winx. You owe her to give her the best words you possibly can. At the same time, you've still got to call a race. She's winning a horse race. It's a sporting event. So that's the art of it. And that's what we live by. That's what we live by. Bruce McAvaney has called for 40 years and will be remembered for what a legend, what a champion.
This is a famous victory, a magnificent performance. What a legend, what a champion.
Four words. Greg Miles called 36 Melbourne Cups and will always be remembered for a champion becomes a legend.
But McCartney needs a clear with 100 metres to go. Excellent runs to second. Olajuwon runs on, but a champion becomes a legend. McCartney Deaver has won it.
Sports broadcasters, they finish their career, and they're always remembered by about a sentence. And, you know, for me, Dennis Cometti, with Boyd's goal in the grand final in 2016, a stadium holds its breath.
And Franklin was run down. Tom Boyd's got it. Tom Boyd goes long. How will it bounce? The stadium holds its breath. It's a goal. And the western suburbs erupt.
It's five words. You know, summed up his life, summed up his career, you know, just a great broadcaster. So we live for those times.
Do you think you've had your moment yet, or is yours, like, is there a moment for you or a call that stands out for you that is, I guess, one for you, your favourite and your best one, but also one that you kind of remember from another race caller?
Yes and no. I mean, to be honest, I think the great thing about this job, and not just asking me but all of the callers, is they still go to the races thinking they've got their best call in them. And I do. I honestly think that the best thing I'll ever do in my calling career hasn't happened yet. I don't know what sporting event it'll be. Hopefully it'll be a Cox Plate. I'm sure it probably will be. You know, it'll be a big moment that I walk away and go, I reckon I just about can't beat that. But, yeah, I've had little things along the way. Like, I think Vowan de Clare's Melbourne Cup for me was special.
Master of Reality just in front. Vowan de Clare kicks. Vowan de Clare's won it for Australia. They're on top of the world.
I'll always love the Winx era. I mean, we walked onto this racetrack on a couple of occasions. In what theatre it was. What excitement we had at this place. It'd be very hard to bring that back. It was a special time, you know. It was extraordinary what she did for the sport, for this place, for everybody that was connected to it, you know.
Winks is staving off Ben Battle. Cometh the hour, cometh the legend. Greatness, Winks has done it. It's Equo Utopia.
You do feel a little part of it, you know. So have I had the moments, you know, in Olympic Games, you know, a couple of Aussie golds at rowing. And for me, I called Mo Farah winning the 5,000 and 10,000 in London. And that was, you know, for athletics fans, that's just about as good as it gets. So, you know, I've done some lovely things, but there's more fire in the belly now than there was 20 years ago to call a great race or a great event. So I think and it might happen, it might not. I still think the best moment in my career is probably still to come.
Good answer.
And maybe if I'm 75, I'd probably still say the same thing.
Yeah. So the 2017 Cox Plate rolls around. It's your first official one as number one caller in Melbourne. Winks has just won the Turnbull by as far as you can throw your hat. She's $1.18, looking to emulate the feats of Kingston Town. Talk us through the memories of that race. Everyone thought it might have been an easy race. Humidor descended on her. Did your heart sink like the rest of us?
Well, it did, because Humidor snuck through. He was like a sniper. He just sort of came through. And there was one moment there on the turn where she was home. But then the most extraordinary thing about horse racing is how a horse can be home for, you know, all money. One stride later, they're not. Or the opposite. They can be struggling and in one stride they're winning the race. Good horses do that. Good horses do that. Like Kingston Town. He was gone for 1,600 metres and then all of a sudden he was unstoppable, you know. Winks did that many times. And Humidor all of a sudden was there. And I thought, oh, I've gone too early here. I've just gone there. I didn't say it, but I've sort of gone an early crow. It's like, oh, goodness, you know.
The valley's rocking and the world is knocking. Winks goes to the front. 200 to go. Humidor to the outside. It's Winks in front by a length. Humidor on the outside is trying hard. It's Winks in front. Humidor's coming at her. Winks is holding on. The Great Mare completes the great trilogy of the turn.
A remarkable race. A remarkable race. In that I think most people at the track that day were still in some form of sort of shock, really, that she'd won it and she'd done what most horses wouldn't even dream about doing, is winning three Cox Plates. But that idea of winning three Cox Plates was also sort of not overshadowed, but also a lot of people thought, goodness me, the old boys run a big race too. It was a great day, a great day. And then, of course, the difference between the drama of that day to the year after, where it was almost just, it was like a barrier trial for her. You know, it was built up to be a battle with Ben Battle, but it wasn't really a battle. She was home from a long way out. And it was a completely different feel to the 12 months before, where she had an absolute challenge on her hands. You won't get a more dramatic final 200 of a Cox Plate. We've seen some beauties. You know, Bone Crusher, our Waverley Star, will be very hard to beat. Superimposers was dramatic for different reasons. Saintly's Cox Plate was one of the best you'll ever see as far as finishes. But the drama of the last 200 metres of Winks Humidor, it'll be very hard to match.
Yeah, safe to say a few hearts of a star for you that day. It was one of the, it was like time stood still in that moment with that. We didn't know where it was going to go, but luckily she held on and the fairy tale kept rolling on.
Yeah, it was because it was a Winks party, wasn't it, for a few years. So a lot of it was meant to be the build-up. You rock up like a football fan with your Winks scarf and your Winks flag. She wins. We all celebrate. You go home. That was sort of the sort of mentality of the Winks era. And it wasn't like that on that day. She was given and 200 to go. When all of a sudden, of all horses, Humidor, who was a very, very good racehorse, but an enigma in his own way with injuries, etc. It was a remarkable race, and that's what the Cox Plate does. It's a phenomenal race for many reasons. But if you were to run a horse race now and say, where are we going to run Australia's best race, you probably wouldn't run it here. And that's the loveliest thing about the Cox Plate, is it's the most unique race course we've got in this country. And tell me a bad horse that's ever won a Cox Plate.
Correct.
The best horse wins every single time. And the great thing about this Coliseum is that when you come here, you know on Cox Plate Day, the best horse will win. And that's why we love the Cox Plate.
Do you have a favourite Cox Plate moment that stands out to you amongst or on top of all others?
I think for me, a lot look back on that era of Better Loosen Up, Let's Elope. It was a golden era of Group 1 horses, Wait for Age horses. We had, of course, Superimpose had won the famous double that we'll never see again, two Epsoms, two Doncasters. Better Loosen Up was a Japan Cup winner, took on the world. Let's Elope was a star in her own right. And we had this mighty horse, Superimpose, in the most remarkable field, covered by about three lengths. So, and, of course, Naturalism, who should have just about won a Japan Cup, was narrowly beaten in one. We forget about Naturalism, how good he was. He fell because it was a three-horse pile-up at the 600. So you'll never get another Cox Plate like that. That was one right out of the box. And I remember as a 12-year-old boy spellbound by that race, and still am. If you watch the replay over and over again, it's there's plenty to take in.
Down the outside, Superimpose. Let's Elope in the middle. Prince Salieri getting a run. Better Loosen Up and Superimpose. Let's Elope in front. Superimpose driving. Super. I think Super and Ose to Let's Elope on the Cox Plate.
So I'd say for me, my favourite Cox Plate was Superimpose. And the reception he got that day, he was an old boy by then, a much loved champion of the turf. That's really what he was. And so that was a famous Cox Plate. I was here the day Might and Power destroyed them. I was here the day Sunline won her first. So they're horses that I remember fondly as well. That was a magnificent era in the late 90s. And obviously for me, I can't go past the Winx era, being involved, but also just being here on those days. It was something that everybody that remarked, you know, if you're a race caller, judge, jockey, spectator, punter, bookmaker, whatever you, administrator, you'll never forget being here on those days.
Just quickly jumping back into Winx, did you feel the pressure? Like, you know, we saw what Waller was like in the build-up and the owners were like, you know, you could tell that they were visibly stressed and the build-up, you know, took its toll on them. Mm. How did you feel going, you know, having to be the voice of, I guess you were the voice of her for 2 years. How did you go dealing with that?
Well, it was pressure, but it was also, again, sort of going back to saying about being, it was a horse race, you know. So as someone once said to me at the time, you're not going to get criticised for calling a good race, you know. So, yeah, there's always that theatre. You've got to throw, you know, some words in to do her justice. But you've also got to call the race accurately. So I could have been in the Humidor year just absolutely boned up with just expression after expression. But it wasn't going to help me because Humidor had jumped out of the pack and I didn't have no time. It's a live horse race. So I went in knowing the importance of the moments, but also knowing that I still had to call the race accurately and appropriately. So that took the pressure off in a way that really I'm just the narrator calling a race. Sure, the last one probably got a bit more theatrical because she was home and it was four Cox Plates, but I still had a job to do. And there was always no guarantee she was going to win either. It's a horse race, you know. We all come to the races thinking we've got them all sorted, and then we leave thinking we're fools by race nine, you know. So there was pressure, and they were massive moments, as you know. They were massive races watched by a lot of people. But at the same time, I just tried to do her justice, but also do the race justice.
We know race calling, you've got to be engaging and informative and you've got to have that voice. In your opinion, how much of that was you were born with that voice and how much of it have you like trained up over the years?
No, Scotch. Scotch helps me. I say that in jest. I say that in jest. Although it probably doesn't not help. It's a good question because if I was to, you know, play you races from when I was calling the greyhounds down the straight at heels, yeah, oh yes, I was like a chipmunk, you know, and I don't know. I think you train your voice, and I listen to a lot of racing as a kid. You know, I was obsessed with listening to the race callers. So I wonder if I took so much of it in. It's a little bit like when you go overseas and you take in people's accents, and then after 3 weeks you start talking like them, you know. And I wonder if I did that. You know, I was just so obsessed with race callers that I would listen to them all the time and how they were pronouncing words. And so I wonder if it rubbed off on me in a way. But no doubt the evolution of the human body certainly helped me as well, that the voice got deeper and all that sort of stuff. So to me, I think race callings, yeah, you've got to have it as sort of a talent if you put it in that way. But it's also a trained talent in that it, to learn the colours, it's a photographic memory, but then that has to get converted into some sort of pattern. So on a race day, I'm in a pattern. I call, learn 12 horses, forget them, learn the next lot. And I've done that for 20 years. So if you keep doing it, it's like anything. You spend countless hours on something, it gets easier. And I wonder if with the voice, because I'm using it the same way for so long, then it's got to this sort of stage. I think the great thing about race callers' voices, it's our unique thing. A lot of us are doing the same thing, but to tell us apart are our voices in a way, and that's the fun of it.
So we're set for a massive spring carnival. Obviously, the first time crowds have been able to come back to racing in, I think it's 3 years.
Yeah.
Is there a moment or two moments or three moments that you're really looking forward to this year, races that you're really looking forward to this year, obviously being the centenary year of the Ladbrokes Cox Plate, but is there a particular storyline you're looking to follow this year spring?
I think you guys are blessed, because I think you've got the storyline of the spring as we sit here on a cold Melbourne day heading into a spring carnival. I think you guys have got the storyline. So I'd be thinking in a theatrical way, you know, the theatre around this race this year. So 12 months ago, we had nobody here. It was almost soul-destroying in a way, the early part of our spring carnival last year. And we're at Moonee Valley. And the great thing about racing is even when it's downtrodden and people within it are downtrodden about whatever's happening in the world, a horse race just lifts your spirits. And I vividly remember after last year's race when State of Rest just nabbed Animo.
State of Rest just in front of Animo. State of Rest holding on. State of Rest, I think, has just won for the Emerald Isle from Animo, and very elegant.
And there was a protest. And of course, I'm not involved in any of the protest broadcasts, if you like. And I was just upstairs lapping this up, thinking, this is remarkable to think we're at a race course with no one here. It's the most television drama of people trying to get cameras into windows that didn't exist and blindfolds and all sorts of things. It was extraordinary. The most fantastic bit of theatre for 30 or 40 minutes. Animo doesn't get the protest. He's back to revenge this year. How good would it be if we had them hanging off the rafters at Moonee Valley, which we will, a Cox Plate starved crowd, and have Animo come out and win the Cox Plate? I think you've got the narrative of the spring, to be honest, out of the big races through. You'll have the best horses come for it, which you should, because it's the best race. You'll have the international interest, you'll have our best, and you'll have spectators back to where we love the Cox Plate. It'll be the greatest Cox Plate roar at the start that we've heard for a long, long, long time.
We need to bottle that up, mate, and put it in a marketing piece to get out there. But no, you couldn't have said it any better.
I think it'll be magnificent. I think that, well, where we're sitting here, I think you won't be able to get a spot in the mounting yard before the Cox Plate this year. People will be starved for it, you know. I think that's the excitement leading into all of the big races at any of the tracks through the spring, is that we're going to have crowds that are enthusiastic and just waiting. They can't wait, I'm sure. And we can't wait to have them back, because it was a bloody depressing 2 years, I know that. I think most in Melbourne racing would agree a year was okay, but when it hit us for a second year, it was soul destroying. So I think everyone's ready to absolutely lap it up.
There's a tip from Em Hill. Animo wins the Cox Plate and get off and get the first.
Well, the thing is, isn't it funny that they always talk about head and heart with tips, you know, and a lot of the time your head will tell you something, but yeah, for the theatre of the race, you know, Animo, I mean, it's impossible, we're quite a while off the Cox Plate, but he, I mean, the way he's going at the moment, he's looking like he's going to be very, very close, but until the field's formulated, it's hard to know. But, you know, for the theatre of what we saw last year and then moving into this year, I think Animo's definitely the story so far, but there's plenty of horses to challenge him, and that's what we love.
Yep. One question I know a lot of people are interested in, with a race that you're invested in either by ownership or financially having to bet yourself, we know Brian Martin called his own horse Fields of Omar to win a Cox Plate, and he said, yes, you've done it. You kind of let it out a little bit. How do you go with calling a race where you've got some invested interest in?
Well, as far as punting goes, I enjoy a bet, but I wouldn't be someone who you would consider to be a great punter. You know, I enjoy a bet, and if I was on a day off, I'd, you know, enjoy a couple of wagers. But so to walk onto a race course on a Saturday, I might, if I'm interested in one at 12 to 1 or something, I'll have a bet. But it doesn't drive me. In fact, a lot of the time I might even forget to back a horse because of what I'm doing. That interests me more than having a bet. But I do enjoy a bet. So that part doesn't worry me. As far as owning horses, I mean, I've got limited experience when it comes to calling horses of my own. I recently had the pleasure of calling one at Sandown that I part owned. And that was a thrill. I was quite shocked after it, actually. So I couldn't believe how BM would have done that with Cox Plates. Yeah, it's a skill in almost departmentalizing your role and your emotional attachment to the race and the horse. And I think you're right. When he sort of said, we've done it, he sort of let that departmentalized part of the emotion just sort of creep in a bit, which you understand. It's a Cox Plate, for heaven's sake, you know. How you do it in a Melbourne Cup, I don't know. It's hard enough as it is, but... put it this way, it's a good problem to have. Good problem to have. If you're calling your own horse winning a Cox Plate, A, you're calling a Cox Plate, and B, you're owning a winner. So you're in a good spot.
And just to finish off, the Cox Plate, what does it mean to you or for you, the Cox Plate?
Well, I think for me, I always have thought that the Cox Plate, for many reasons, the type of race that it is, it's, you know, there's no restrictions with the Cox Plate. It's just the best of the best. Run at a race course that there's almost a rumble of anxiety around Moonee Valley on Cox Plate Day. There's this, you know, something special is going to happen. You sort of know that it's going to be dramatic, mainly because you've just got 30,000 people crammed into this place. And there's no other race course like it. So for me, the Cox Plate was always this dramatic piece of sport. I always saw it as a dramatic piece of sport where the best win. And you can't beat it. You know, it's unique. And people have travelled the world to come and watch it, and they continue, you know, they'll continually do that. And to me, it's also a shop window for us to the rest of the world. So we have Lee Grassier come out and win a Cox Plate and then go and win one of the best races in the world in Japan. State of Rest wins the Cox Plate here and then goes to Royal Ascot and wins the Princess of Wales. What access we have now to some of the great races around the world via the Cox Plate. So that's for me what it is. It's the best race and the most dramatic couple of minutes of horse racing theatre that Australia's got.
Awesome, mate. Well, that's all we've got. Thanks for your time today.
I'm going to join Moonee Valley as a marketing guru.
We're actually looking for one at the moment.
Are you?
We've
got a little bit on at the moment, but call me after the next Cox Plate.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Matt. It's been great to have you on.
No worries. Thanks for having me. Awesome. Thanks for having me. It's always an absolute pleasure to come to the Valley. It's great fun.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, mate. See you Saturday.